Ask. Happy to be joined by our friend Nate Duncan, host of the Dunked On podcast, one of the best analytical minds in all of basketball. And let's start with something, Nate, that we haven't really discussed yet here this morning, and that's what's the free agency impact of Rudy Gay's injury?
Yeah, I was talking about this on my show last night. It's interesting because he's got a $14 million player option for next year. We've seen guys coming off this injury, though a little bit younger, Wes Matthews, still do very well on the market in 2015, and he actually has recovered and played well. So that's something that maybe is in Rudy's favor. On the other hand, you know, if his recovery doesn't go that well, $14 million is a lot of money. I would still expect him probably to opt out anyway, especially just because he's been kind of clear that he didn't necessarily want to remain in Sacramento. And so, you know, you'd think even if the worst he's going to do is get a one-year deal for eight figures, pretty close to what he's already guaranteed, and he gets to go where he wants to. So I think he still will opt out, I would imagine.
So, Nate, how does this affect the way the negotiations will work in the summer? Because it takes 6 to 9 months to recover from a torn Achilles. So that means that teams might be still questioning whether he can come back. And you're saying that's not going to affect the amount of money he can make that much?
No, it certainly will. I mean, if it weren't for this injury, you know, he'd probably be looking at a three-year deal, you know, at least $15 million a year, maybe even more than that. Now, you know, it could be a little bit shorter, but who knows? The wing market is always very thin, and if he can prove that he's on his way to recovery, I mean, he has enough time to where he can be ready for training camp next year. Now, you know, he's probably not going to be the player that he was. He's already going to be 31 this offseason, so it's certainly going to reduce his market value. I mean, I would still, just given the tenor of some of his comments and these leaks that he definitely intends to opt out, you know, usually when that's leaked, it's like as a way to say, hey, I'm not coming back here, trade me, you know, in a way that's not going to get you fined. So I wouldn't necessarily expect him to be back with the Kings if he does opt out.
But I'm also wondering, Nate, if there's any scenario in which the Kings are, quote unquote, his only option.
Do you know? That would surprise me.
Yeah.
I mean, I think at the very least, I think he could get a 1 year, you know, $10 million prove it type of deal, and it would be a place where he wanted to be. And so considering he's already made $100 million in his career and is kind of given, I think he'd be willing to go with that. And said, I would be shocked if he, you know, the market is so tepid for him that he feels like he needs to opt into that last year with the $14 million.
Nate Duncan with us here on the Lowdown. Nate, there's a perception amongst fans because of a little win streak the Kings were able to put together that they're better without Rudy Gay. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yes, that is not true.
Okay.
Rudy Gay, there it is.
The Kings have played by far their best basketball this season with Rudy Gay on the floor. He is the only member of the rotation who has a positive plus minus on the year. They're about plus 1.5 points for every 100 possessions when he's on the floor. When he's off the floor, they are negative 10.0 points per 100 possessions. If that were over a full season, that's basically worst team in the NBA type of levels that we're talking about. You know, these last couple of years, Sixers had about that type of net rating. So that's what we're talking about here, the way they played this year without him off the floor. It won't be that bad, I think, going forward, because I think some of that's random noise. But, I mean, they have played their best when he's been on the floor. They're really going to miss him this year now that he's gone.
So, Nate, this sounds to me like this is the worst-case scenario for the Kings franchise, because you have your second leading scorer, he's off the floor, so you're not going to get any of the benefit of him being there. You can't trade him now because he's hurt, and he's not going to re-sign with you. Does that sound right?
Well, I would actually say that if you're being realistic, it's actually fine, because they need to just get as high of a draft pick as possible. Again, they got that pick that they owe to the Bulls, top 10 protected. That almost certainly now they will keep that pick again. I'm sure they'll rest guys again at the end of the year. The playoffs are not going to happen for them now. They probably weren't anyway after this recent homestand they had that was so disastrous. You know, some of the projection sites had them at like a 7% chance of the playoffs. So you're better off taking another bite at the apple and hoping that maybe they can do a little bit better in the draft than they have, you know, the last 5 years or whatever it's been where they've struck out so badly. I mean, they just, you have to find a way to get more young talent around DeMarcus Cousins, who it looks like is going to be a king for a long time now with the extension that he's been reported to have been offered. So, I mean, because if they made, even if they made the playoffs this year, like, where are you going? They have control over their draft pick. If it's really high, they might have to swap it with the Sixers, but it'll still be pretty high, even in that case. So this is another bite at the apple to get some talent. They wouldn't have had any other way to do that. So I actually think this isn't the end of the world for the Kings franchise. And it also maybe saves them from, like, really overpaying Rudy Gay, which is the only way he ever would have come back, if he ever would have come back.
What are your, you just mentioned the playoffs. We've talked about this ridiculous chase amongst teams for that eighth seed in the Western Conference, the horrible, horrible Western Conference. What are your impressions of the Kings as well as the other teams, maybe like a Denver, Portland, New Orleans, ones teams that are competing for that eighth spot?
Yeah, well, I think the Kings were looking like they could be one of the teams that might be in that fight. Now that I think, what did they go, 1-6 on this last homestand or something like that?
That's it.
And now they're going on the road for eight games. So they have a harder schedule than a lot of these teams, whereas Portland, they had a really rough December. Their January is going to be, has some easier games in it. I think Portland has shown the ability with this talent to play at a much higher level than the Kings ever has. And so there's a reason now that the Kings are projected, and those projections that have them, you know, under 10% chance of making the playoffs, those don't even know that Rudy Gay is injured yet. You know, they're just basing it on how they've played so far this year. And I think Denver, you know, they've been peaking. They at least have things that they do really well. You know, they're a great offense. Their defense is terrible, but with Nikola Jokic, they score really well. They can run teams out of the building at altitude. You'd be hard-pressed to find something that this Kings team does really well right now.
You know, I was thinking about comparing what the Kings have been doing for the past 4 years to what the Philadelphia 76ers have been doing for the past 4 years. And at this stage, to me, Nate, the 76ers front office look like geniuses. And the Sacramento
Absolutely.
Kings look like the opposite.
Yeah, and you know, everybody was like, oh, wow, what are the Sixers doing? They're trading away all these guys. Well, you know, if you're a Sixers fan, would you be happier to have undergone the last 4 years for the Kings or for the Sixers? I mean, both teams were bad. They never made the playoffs during those times. What's the difference? And now the Sixers have a ton of talent, and the Kings are utterly bereft at this point.
Yeah, and the fans in Philadelphia never had any illusions that they were going to the playoffs, yet every single year in Sacramento, there's that carrot that's dangled out there.
This might be it. Go to the playoffs.
But you know you have no realistic shot, yet the franchise is insisting that you do. Frustrating.
I mean, I think some of these years they had realistic shots at getting to the eighth seed, but when you're giving up draft picks into the future, when you're drafting so incredibly poorly as they have, I mean, that Nick Stauskas, Ben McLemore, Willie Cauley-Stein three-year run of top 10 picks has got to be up there among the worst three-year run of top 10 picks in NBA history, unless things really change for those guys, which, you know, McLemore and Stauskas are basically gone already, and Cauley-Stein is not looking very good. I think you would much rather have had more of a cohesive plan than let's chase the eighth seed every year. But the one thing is they did get this arena built, and they are very successful from a business standpoint. They're in the top 15 in the league now in revenue, in part due to that new publicly funded arena. So these things are going well from a business standpoint.
Halfway through the season, Nate, we'll move on to other stuff without the Kings because there's a lot of basketball to talk about. Halfway through the season, who's having a better year, Russ or James Harden?
I looked at this about 2 weeks ago. I concluded that it was Russ just because he doesn't have as much talent around him, and he still has been able to be efficient, and I think he's less of a drag defensively if you compare what Oklahoma City does when he's on the court versus off compared to Houston. There's a much bigger differential there. But, I mean, I think Oklahoma City has a really tough stretch, and if they start to fall off a little bit, if teams start to adjust to the fact that Russ really is a one-man show with no shooting around him at all offensively, that could certainly change by the end of the year. But I would have said that Russ was my MVP pick when I looked at it a couple weeks ago.
James Harden played really great last night again. I mean, there were two great stars last night in Giannis Antetokounmpo and James Harden. And I find what's going on in Houston, Nate, so fascinating. Like, how are they so much better than what they were last year? There wasn't a massive roster overhaul. I know they added Ryan Anderson and they added pieces, but it's not like they're playing with a big three or a big four down there.
Well, it's funny because not 5 minutes before I came on this show, I'm at the D-League Showcase in Toronto right now, and I apologize to Daryl Morey for saying that his offseason wasn't that good and that they committed too much money to some injury-prone players. I mean, their offense has gone from being, you know, lower end of the top 10 in the league to one of the best offenses that we've seen because they just have this unbelievable shooting now around James Harden with Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson. And they've also been a little healthier than they were last year, too. And I think getting rid of Dwight Howard, who had kind of stopped trying defensively and was demanding touches in the post when he wasn't really any good at posting up anymore, like all that really helped. The culture really helped. But the biggest thing to me is they've got these guys who can spot up around James Harden running a pick and roll from 28 feet away, and it's you can't close out on these guys. Like, it's so far to get there that if you can't guard that pick and roll two-on-two with Harden and Capella or Nene or Montrezl Harrell, you're a torch. You're just going to give up threes. They're shooting like 40 threes a game. It's insane.
Do you think in 3.5 months, when it really matters, that they can compete with the Warriors and Spurs right now?
The Spurs, yes. The Warriors, no. I think they actually match up pretty well with the Spurs because Greg Popovich has insisted really on going with two traditional bigs. And if he's going to be playing Pau Gasol and LaMarcus Aldridge trying to guard Houston at the three-point line, I think that could be very difficult for them. And actually, James Harden has usually played pretty well against Kawhi Leonard, one of the few guys to experience much success against him. So I think the Spurs, absolutely, that would be a wonderful series. And the Clippers at full health, I think, would still be in there as well. I wouldn't even count out the Jazz if they can get at full health. I think all those teams could realistically, you know, be very close to each other. But I don't think they're going to be able to compete with the Warriors because the Warriors actually have the personnel to defend Houston and switch those pick and rolls and make Harden's life difficult, which I don't think any of those other teams do. And then the Warriors probably can score even better than Houston. I don't think Houston could defend them.
Yeah, you know, Nate, I was thinking about another team that's on the East Coast that has maybe a similar situation to what's happening with the Kings, although the details are different. Talking about the New York Knicks, and what are their options as far as Carmelo Anthony? I mean, they brought in a lot of veterans thinking they were going to, you know, compete for that playoff spot, and they probably will. But it doesn't seem to be working the way that they expected. What are their options for Carmelo and even the other veterans they have there?
Very few options. And this has been a topic of conversation with some of the executives that I've been talking to at the showcase as well, that, you know, Carmelo has a no-trade clause. So he has a year left on his contract after this and then a player option after that as well, you know, making almost $30 million a year. And Carmelo only wants to go somewhere where he's going to win. You know, that's going to be a Boston or a Clippers or, you know, something like that. And I don't know that he's that good for the amount of money that he's making. But if you're Boston, do you even want to say, would you rather have Carmelo Anthony or would you rather have $30 million in cap space this summer where you can go in and sign someone who's 5 years younger than him who can play some defense? You know, I mean, Carmelo at this point, he's still a pretty good scorer, not a great scorer anymore, and he can't defend it all. So now the fact that he, A, only wants to go to places that are going to win, and B, places that are good already probably don't want him for his contract, it does make him extremely difficult to move.
And what about Derrick Rose? Derrick Rose probably had his best game of the year last night. Is there any chance that he regains some sort of form and becomes – because he hasn't played that bad this year – can he become a valuable asset somewhere, if not in New York?
Yeah, other than this weird thing where he just didn't show up for a game and didn't tell anyone that, I think he's exceeded expectations. He's been healthy, which is the biggest thing for him, to avoid any injury. And he really has gone through now 2 years where he's been able to play, you know, the majority of his team's games. He's looked pretty good, but he's going to be 28, and he's not really you know, doesn't have the greatest health record. He relies a lot on explosion. I think of him as kind of a lower end starting point guard, but he brings a lot of baggage. He's reportedly wants a max contract. He still, you know, has been an MVP before. I think it could be difficult to kind of fit him into a system because he needs the ball in his hands. So it'll be interesting. I mean, there are a few point guard needy teams. It wouldn't surprise me, actually, if, you know, he were someone that the Kings would take a look at if his market does kind of fall. I mean, the Kings have been looking at sort of these distressed point guard assets as they kind of roll through guys. And, you know, with Darren Collison being a free agent and Lawson as well, he may be someone that the Kings look at, actually.
Hey, Nate, I want to bring you back to Sacramento for one question. And you say you're at the D-League showcase in Canada, I do believe. And I don't think that our D-League player was there. He's back here now, talking about Malachi Richardson. Have you had a chance to see him at all in the D-League? And do you have an assessment of his ability?
You know, I haven't. I saw him in Summer League. I'm not incredibly familiar with him, but what I have seen from him hasn't been as good as I necessarily would have liked to see. I mean, it's the number 22 pick, so you don't expect a ton from that. But, I mean, I think he's someone who can create shots, but a lot of those shots are just going to be kind of inefficient, long twos. He's not going to really, like, get to the rim. He's not going to play make for others. And defensively, you know, I'm looking at him as kind of an average guy, not really, you know, a lockdown type of guy. Maybe he could get there at this point, at some point in his career, but probably not. So, I mean, he's not one of the players in the draft that I was higher on, to be honest, and I haven't seen much to change my opinion on there, although, you know, I'm not going to tell you that I've watched, you know, hours of film on him in the D-League series.
That's okay, Nate. I do have one I hope you know about, my all-time favorite backup point guard, Ray McCallum. Have you been able to see Ray McCallum?
Yeah, I saw him yesterday. He's playing for the Grand Rapids Drive. He was one of the last cuts for the Pistons, and you'll recall that Reggie Jackson was injured at the start of the year, and then they actually – the Pistons actually claimed Beno Udrich off waivers, who has actually played reasonably well for them, in part because I think they felt that Ray McCallum couldn't do the job as the backup point guard with Reggie Jackson injured and Ish Smith as the starter. So, you know, he looked okay. He's probably one of the better point guards in the D-League, but I'm not sure what his elite skill is that's going to get him into being an NBA rotation player, because he's not an unbelievable shooter, not incredibly explosive, and not a guy who's a pure point guard, has great vision. So, I mean, I think he's a guy who could be a professional. He's a smooth player, you know, has okay size for a point guard, but probably somebody who's always kind of destined to be on the lower end, third point guard slash D-League type of guy, in my opinion.
Nate, you could never scout what's in his heart. He's got heart, Nate. Hey. He's got heart.
Hey, Ray McCallum. Ken's love for Ray McCallum is a running punchline on this show, Nate. Yeah. So,
well, he did play 48 minutes that one game when they were tanking, right? I forget what year that was, like 2014-15, I think it was.
Yeah. Is that where your love for him started?
He always plays hard. I think he's a smart player that plays hard.
Is there someone that you watch a lot of basketball, Nate? Is there someone that you just love to watch?
Oh, love to watch. I mean, Giannis would be the guy at this point. Giannis and Jabari Parker, those two guys together, anytime they have a good game, I'm always at least watching the highlights of their game. Those guys just have so many moves, so explosive, young as well, like growing basketball intelligence. So that whole Bucks team, that's probably like my number two league pass watch right now behind Golden State.
Now, you went Giannis. You didn't go the full name.
Oh, yeah, Giannis Antetokounmpo?
Oh, okay. All right. You never know. You never know.
I've been seeing – I saw that guy before he got drafted in Italy, and he spelled his name – they actually spelled his name differently with, like, a D in it at that point, and then they changed it to, like, the current spelling. So I've been on top of the Giannis name thing. Don't you worry.
Nice. Host of the Dunked On podcast. Subscribe on iTunes or whatever you use. Also host of the Twitter NBA show. Nate, it's always a pleasure. We appreciate you being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys. Pleasure for me as well.
Absolutely. Thanks. That is Nate Duncan right there. I freaking love that guy.
Yeah, that was outstanding.